We're meeting with Coach Andrew Wright, Texas Tech men's basketball, and we appreciate your time, Coach. Excited to have you on. I've been following you the last couple months, and when we get to nuts and bolts, I straight up stole some of your curvilinear work you did on the three-point line and really liked it, and then I started digging deeper. And as a segue into our kind of intern advice and questions, I do have to ask, and I'm from Fort Worth, Dallas, born in Everman, then moved to HED. All I did was work private schools in DFW. And if I read everything correctly, you were at Fort Worth Academy, which I've never heard of. And I've heard of every private school. I worked at Watauga Harvest for 1 year. Uh-huh. So I'm like, where is Fort Worth Academy? And here you are last year in the Elite Eight at Texas Tech. I think part of these questions and part of your insight, I don't know what you're doing at Fort Worth Academy, but did you have in your mind, you know what, in 2025, I'm going to be at Texas Tech, and we're going to go to the Elite Eight. How did you get from Fort Worth Academy to Texas Tech? And touch on that a little, which will lead probably into some of these great questions from our interns.
You know, it wasn't anything that I ever really planned. I got, like a lot of us, I got my degree in kinesiology. I went to TCU in Fort Worth. And like a lot of places, the kines department's broken down into a few different subsections where it's the pre-physical therapy track or athletic training or what they call their movement science. And then the fourth one was physical education. And I moved towards the physical education route. When I was in school, I wasn't a great student, and I knew that I still had an interest in learning about the body and how the body moved. I loved training. I wasn't an athlete at the college level. I wasn't a great athlete anyway, but I knew that I loved training, and it allowed me to learn a little bit about that. And then my training and my learning about that aspect of it came outside of the classroom. And it did allow me to kind of put those two things together, which was exciting for me. Like a lot of us, I started by reading the bodybuilding magazines and trying all the different stuff that you see in muscle and fitness, et cetera. And it slowly started to make sense. And the thing that I think, looking back at it, the thing that I missed the most, just probably digressing a little bit, the thing that I missed the most was the nutritional aspect. When I look back at college, the thing, if I had really wanted to get the most out of my training at that age, when I was 160 pounds and I was in college, and I was trying to gain muscle and I was trying to gain strength and all those qualities, but I wasn't eating the way that I realized now that I needed to eat. So looking back at it in retrospect, I'm really able to see what was good that I was doing and then what holes I really had there. And then it allows me to help the guys that we have now in terms of making use of the cafeteria. Looking back at the cafeteria, maybe not for everybody, but for most students, it's free, or you pay for it on the front end at least, but it's a place that you can go and you can eat and you can, I mean, it's an all you can eat deal. So, I mean, I wish I'd made the most of it at the time. But then moving down, I graduated, and of course, everybody, for the most part, when they graduate, they find something within the realm of the scope of their major. And that's what I thought I was supposed to do. And that's how I found Fort Worth Academy. And it really, the way that I found Fort Worth Academy was very much a tone setter for how I went about finding everything else in the field of strength and conditioning. I literally typed in schools in Fort Worth. Of course, Fort Worth ISD popped up, all the public school systems, but I was always a private school kid growing up. Fortunate in that regard, but also growing up in New Orleans, if you're able to go private school, just New Orleans being what it is, that's what you do. So I knew that I understood that culture, and that brought me to Fort Worth Academy. I sent a, it was literally a very serendipitous cold call where I emailed, and they had actually just let go of a physical education teacher for some reasons that weren't fantastic, and they were looking for somebody, and I just happened to email them at the right time. They brought me on as a long-term assistant or a long-term substitute, and it worked out. It was very much a trial run, March through the end of the school year, and then they brought me on for the next school year as a full-time PE teacher. And as a 23-year-old kid who didn't know what he wanted to do with his life, it was a great thing. Beautiful campus, great kids, parents were awesome. It was a happy place. It was a place that, while I was figuring out what I wanted to do with my life, I could go and pretty stress-free try to be the best PE teacher that I could. And they allowed me to fail, and they didn't ever expect perfection of me. And it just let me get an idea of how to communicate with people, how to communicate with kids, kindergarten to eighth grade. It's not a high school. So very much teaching me how to express in real, concise, short descriptions, how to get something done with a time frame that I need to get something done. So it did teach me some efficiency. And then going into the weeds here, I don't know if anybody has ever seen it, but there was a show on Discovery Channel at the time in 2013. It was called American Muscle. And imagine a fitness show, but in the model of Deadliest Catch or Orange County Choppers, where you get an insight into the career. But again, it was called American Muscle, and it followed a strength coach in Detroit, Mike Barwis, who on the show, he trained Ndamukong Suh. I remember Richard Sherman was on there, and I'm watching him work with these athletes, and they're adults. Everybody in the building was adults, athletes, coaches, and the relationship just, it seemed like there were fewer restrictions in terms of what you could say. And obviously kindergarten to eighth grade teacher, there's some things that you can't say to kids. Yeah. Just in terms of like how you can approach them with certain level of honesty, certain levels of just saying things the way they are. You do have to sugarcoat things a little bit, as it should be with kids that age. But I saw that and I thought, this is pretty cool. So that got me going. And this is before I ever had an internship. And I just started typing in, all right, strength and conditioning. And then I realized, okay, there's private gyms. And then I realized, okay, there's pro teams. And then I realized you can do this with college and high school teams. And I thought, okay, well, college sounds most appealing at the time. And I just started, I noticed, all right, on every one of these athletics department pages, there's a strength and conditioning section. Not every one of them is up to date, but a lot of them had emails that you could go and you could send a preliminary email to, a lot like I'm sure your folks have. And I must have sent a gajillion. It didn't matter to me. My girlfriend at the time, now my wife, she probably thought I was nuts. Andrew, you've been looking at this for a week and you're already sending something to Pepperdine and Malibu about trying to go intern there. I was like, well, why the hell not? It's yeah. Malibu. But I sent things everywhere. And a lot of non-responses, a lot of no's, a lot of maybe, but try again in 6 months. And then there were a couple that came back with questionnaires of, hey, fill this out, and then we'll see if we move you on. But North Texas, UNT, became one that, it just worked out very serendipitously, where it was a 45-minute drive, and they invited me to come join. And it really couldn't have worked out much better. I spent the first summer, so I only interned ever as a as a summer intern because I was still teaching during the school years. So in that regard, it was kind of humorous. My wife and I would joke that I'm probably the highest paid intern in the country, still making a teacher's salary, but well, working in the summertime.
If you're getting paid anything, you were probably the highest paid intern in the country.
Yeah. Yeah. And interned in the summer, June, July, and then went back to work during the school year. But after the first summer, I was hooked. I remember I worked with Lou Corolla, who's the football strength coach at Rice now. And I remember thinking when I was walking out the first day back to the car in the parking lot, I called Chelsea and it was routine. I called my wife, Chelsea, and it was right after, like, as soon as I got out the doors and I get into the parking lot, I call her. And I remember I called her and I said, Chelsea, I don't know what the hell I just saw, but it was freaking awesome. And I mean, it took one day. So it was football, women's soccer, and help out wherever I could otherwise. But throughout the next school year, I already started getting going. I waited till about Christmas time to look at, to find out about more internships for the next summer. And before I go further, everybody in this room, Coach, obviously you've been in it for a while, but everybody else, interns and GAs?
Yeah, we're all, okay. All in this room, interns are GA. Okay.
So back home. This is something I would want you to know. And it's coincidental because of who I saw y'all have had previously in the last day, Matt Van Dyke. Mm-hmm. Coach Van Dyke actually offered me an internship when he was at Denver. And looking back at it, obviously I love the track of what I've done over the course of my career. It's been awesome. And as everybody knows, one step in life can change everything. But looking back at it in hindsight, I wish I'd taken it. And what I'll tell you how things turned out was I turned it down because I'm actually getting my own story mixed up here, but I turned it down because I wanted to just go back to North Texas. And at that point I hadn't figured out much, but it would have given me even more experience of a different program and a different coach. I wish I'd taken it, but it is what it is. The next year, what would be my third summer, I actually took an internship offer at Tulane University. It was going to be with football. Now, this is where I would want, as people coming into this field, I want you to be aware. It's a cutthroat field, but you'd be surprised how low in the ranks it can get to where it's cutthroat. I actually got offered a position at a Tulane strength and conditioning internship with football. The coach that hired me took a job, coincidentally, here at Texas Tech with football about 2 months later. So he tells me, and I don't blame him for taking the job here. I would have done it myself. But he calls me, he says, hey, look, I don't have the job. I'm not here anymore. I'm not at Tulane anymore. I'm gone. I'm sorry. But I'm going to put a word in for you with the new strength coach. Hopefully he'll keep you on. So I'm thinking, okay, well, I'm an intern. I'm free help. Why wouldn't you keep me on? I got a call about a month later and he says, I don't have a job for you. And I'm thinking, I told him, I said, sure, I'll come work for free. But I'm going to live at home. My parents live there. I'll work for free. He says, I don't need you. So it's still something that doesn't quite make sense to me why that would work out that way. But it is the way that it worked out. And that's really how a lot of job loss goes anyway. You'll never find out. You'll never get a why. You'll sit back and you'll think, I don't know why this happened. Coincidentally, again, I was able to go back to North Texas for a third summer, and a new strength coach had come in at that point with football, Zach Womack. And that completely changed everything where I got to work with him. A couple coaches who'd been there previously had already seen me work with athletes, and they were able to get Coach Womack to trust me to run some racks with the football group when he was brand new, and he didn't have to trust me, and turning over a culture he had every reason not to, and he allowed me to, and it it gave me a really good level of confidence that somebody like that trusted me. And Zach Womack, who's now at Abilene Christian.
Yeah, first year here, I think.
Yes, I credit him with a lot. A lot of hard lessons that he taught me. He's a coach of coaches in a lot of ways, but he's a great person. And brought me on as a full-time track and field strength coach shortly after. Another piece that I'd want you to know, I had a GA position with Coach Womack. It was with swim and dive. And I literally never even started class. It was about 6 weeks in, and the track position opened, which was full-time, and Coach told me to go for that, so I did. And what I would want any intern or GA to know is experience is good, but at some point you got to make money. And if at least if you ask me, if you can make it work so that the money is coming in and you're still getting good experience, I would do it. I'll be honest with you. I didn't love my time at track and field. It wasn't my favorite experience, but I learned a lot in terms of interacting with coaches and trying to help them feel valued. A lot of track coaches like to run the programs themselves. They'll design the programs themselves. And that's how it was with our team, where I was more just the implementer and not so much the program writer, which was frustrating at first, but it actually took stress off my plate where I didn't have to worry about it. And it allowed me to just develop relationships with the athletes and figure out who I was as a coach. And then there was another turnover in staff about a year and a half later on the basketball side this time. And the basketball strength coach who was exiting recommended me to Coach McCasland at North Texas for the job. And off we went. Another trial period where I ran all four track groups, and then I would run the basketball group too. And it was for a 26-year-old, 27-year-old person, it was pretty stressful. I actually really hated it. The load, I can only imagine now what coaches who have 13, 14 teams go through, because I could barely handle five and keep myself sane. But it worked out, and it's gotten all the way to Lubbock now. Got to work with Coach for 4 years at North Texas, and then he invited me to join him here at Texas Tech, and this is our third year here. But here we are. So Fort Worth Academy, and here we are. So
yeah, what a journey. And I didn't realize Fort Worth Academy wasn't even a high school. That's more impressive that you went from teaching little kid probably how to tie their shoes and they need to go to the bathroom in kindergarten PE to collegiate athletes. That's a big transition. I went reverse order. I left Samuelson State, and the next year was teaching kindergarten PE, and my intensity levels had to drop quite a bit. I lost it on a few little kids and made them cry, and the intensity had to ratchet down pretty quick. Like you were talking about, you got to use different language, different tone of voice with a kid versus a 21-year-old. Awesome history, and a lot of nuggets in there as well for interns and your experience and how sometimes it's not a friendly business and people get let go, or, you know, when you offer your services for free and you're denied, it's a humbling profession as well, which is perfect now, because I think these interns send me their questions and they're great. Let's work back to front. Let's start with Kaiser. And then some of these questions might have been covered, but maybe you can dig into it a little deeper. So Kaiser will start us off.
All right. So I got a couple of questions for you. I'll start off with this can kind of ties into what we did talk about, but if there's anything else to looking back on your early days in the field, what things do you wish you had known that you know now?
You know, I was actually thinking about this the other day. I like to listen to podcasts. It's something I like to do while I go and I run or get outside. I like to listen to podcasts, and you hear a lot of things on podcasts and you think that makes a lot of sense. And it seems like common sense. Why wouldn't somebody do it that way? Or why wouldn't somebody agree with that? But then a lot of times you reflect and you think, well, as much common sense as it makes, Andrew, you don't do it yourself. And I think what I wish I knew to answer your question was, it doesn't need to be in the weight room. It doesn't need to be this drill sergeant cadenced, like uber structured experience for everybody. I think depending on the situation, obviously there's a little more organization and structure in some situations than others. If you've got a 50 person football group, yeah, you got to have some structure in place. You got to have some cadence. Otherwise it just, this disorganization is as contagious as anything else. And I think with my, I call it my upbringing in the field, I think I got a little too engrossed in the idea that everything has to be coach led, everything has to be coach directed. And if it's not, then it's a direct reflection of you as a coach. Then if you can't do that, you're unable to manage a room. There's no shade of gray there. There's no nuance. And that caused me to really make it about me. And I'm still learning this now, that it's not about me. It's not about any one athlete. It's not about anything individual. It's about the team and it's about the experience that the group gets. But I still remember this kind of fishbowl mentality where at North Texas, all the coaches' offices, all the strength coach offices were glass. There was no frosting, no nothing. So it was just Coach Womack could look out and see everything that we're doing from his desk. And he wasn't judging. That's not who he is. But I was afraid that the microscope was on me. So I'm trying to prove myself. And as that occurs, all I know is if I don't see something right, I go 0 to 100. And I just start MFing players and just all of this and that. And before I knew it, it's ingrained in me. And I think I was able to get away with it a little bit more at North Texas because it was prior to the NIL era. There was no money there. And the level of athlete wasn't as high. So in a lot of ways, the athlete didn't have anywhere else to go if they wanted to stay D1. So they didn't have a leg to stand on. And in that regard, I probably abused the situation. It was probably a little of a power play by me where I could do that. And what was the athlete going to do? But I think now something I've learned being at Texas Tech with Coach McCaslin's guidance is, Andrew, you can't do that anymore. The level of athletes too high. They can go other places. A lot of times our competitors, and then it can just implode entire days. I'll readily say that I've done it. I've lost my temper on an athlete here. And it's imploded an entire practice for the team. And it's been really hard to learn that it's not a reflection of me. And it took a lot of reflection. I would ask my wife, do I have an anger problem? And I'm not a person that loses his temper. And she'd look me dead in the eye, Andrew, you don't have an anger problem. You don't get angry at home. You don't get angry anywhere. But it's a way that, again, you've been brought up in this field that it's not with the times anymore. And I'd like to think that within the last year or so, it's really shifted a good bit where it's been, okay, if a player wants to do his own thing, he doesn't want to do what you're asking them to do, you can try. But if he doesn't want to, it's not a reflection on you because more than likely, he's doing the same thing on the court or he's doing the same thing on the field. and he's got the same issues other places that other people are noticing also. And then going down that road, I think it's also important to really know your assistant coaches. The head coach sometimes is going to have a lot going on. You may not be able to have him as a mentor just because he's a CEO of essentially the company of the team. And the assistant coaches are a lot more in the trenches, so to speak, with you. And if you can know the assistant coaches, particularly the one who recruited that player, then you're going to be able to get to the heart of what's going on a lot more quickly, which helps a ton. Assistant coaches are the key to a lot for strength coaches. They usually know the family. They usually know the kid. They've recruited the kid for usually probably a year or more in a lot of cases. They know they have a better idea of what's going on, and they're going to be the mentor for the person regarding what goes on during practice. It usually won't be the head coach, not at first at least. And then I think that takes a lot of load off you, because it allows you to think more broadly about, okay, it's not me. It's not the program. It's just simply, this is the 18 to 22 year old kid who's got a lot on his plate, can't figure it all out at one time. And it's part of life. I didn't know diddly 18 to 22 years old. So, I mean, I can only imagine what these guys are going through. And I think it allowed me to step back and remind myself it's not personal. And try as you might to do the best job you can, you're not going to have 100% success. You're not going to have deadlift PRs with every player. You're not going to have squat PRs with every player, whatever it is. It doesn't happen. I've never batted 1,000. And if you've got a coach that's realistic, they will understand where you're coming from and what you're fighting in some cases also. So I think to answer your question, I think it would be keep your expectations really high, but don't allow yourself to become so engrossed in the result that it impedes your day-to-day level of happiness. Because this really is a cool job. And if you don't like this job, don't let it be because of one person. If you don't like the job, let it be the routine that you don't like or the travel that you don't like or something like that. But don't let it be one person out of 15, because that isn't the way it should be.
No, it's good insight, not just for interns, but someone who's 50 years old and might have lost it on a player this past week. And I know what you're saying, that it's more about you, whether the kid did a shoulder press or a push press at the end of the day. Who knows what happened to that young man 8 hours leading up to me having him in the weight room. So you're not just talking to interns, Coach. You're talking to grizzled veterans as well. And I do think part of that mindset, if you work with football, is switching gears for different personalities of different teams. It's not fourth and one for every player when they walk in there. And I have to remind myself of that frequently, from personalities to even music selections. Every team has a different vibe about them, and you got to read the room, which is not always easy. And that was a good question, Kaiser. What else do you have? That was a great one.
I've got another one. It kind of ties into what we were actually talking about. You did touch on it a little bit, but how do you kind of build a buy-in? Like, say you talked about how someone does their own thing and whether they do that in the weight room or on the field. How would you kind of work on that? I mean, you talked about the assistant coach and getting a relationship with them, but is there something you specifically do besides the relationship to like help build the buy-in with the athletes?
So I'll go the recruiting direction with this, where when we bring in an athlete, we've only got 15 guys. So I get to meet with all of them when they come in. And particularly with transferring being what it is now, you're equally likely to get a guy who's on his second or third strength coach in college as you are a freshman now, who's never trained. So you're getting guys or girls who may have had really good experiences, or that you've got really bad experiences. And the really good experiences still could be good training. It could also be good experiences with really bad training. But because of the person that they did it with, be it a personal trainer, a private person, a brother, a dad, it's got really good memories. And it's something that they loved. On the flip side, it could be, you know, like your old quadrant idea, where it's good memory, bad training, bad memory, bad training, like all four options there where you could be dealing with. So what I would do is I would, before you start training anybody, to whatever degree is possible, ask, what is this room? What is the weight room to you? What have you done before? Tell me about it. Have you ever, what do you like to do for your lower body, your upper body, your core? What do you envision for yourself after a year in the weight room? And you never know what people say. But sometimes they'll tell you, oh yeah, I was standing on a BOSU ball, catching tennis balls. But then they'll pause and they'll say, yeah, it was my dad tossing me the tennis ball and we'd have rock music going on and it was awesome. And you're thinking to yourself, okay, well, that's horse crap training. But I love doing it, but he loved doing it with his dad. So you, like, when you hear that, you think, all right, well, maybe I shouldn't tell the kid that this is bad training because he's obviously got a really good memory to it. So going back to the buy-in idea, try to find as much about it the kid as you can. And obviously there's limited time. You can only talk to a person so long before they have to go somewhere, and then very well coming around the corner could be the first day you got to train them. So you've only got so much time, but if you select your questions carefully enough to get the things that you need to know, you'll be able to learn those things about a kid where at least you can get a foot in the door and you can begin to get headway that way. So I like asking, hey, what do you like to do in the weight room? What did you do at your previous school in the weight room? What don't you like in the weight room? Every one of our guys that came to us this year out of the portal told me, first thing, I hate front squat. I hate it. I don't want to do it. I hate doing it. And I promised them right there on the spot, all right, we're not front squatting them. Could be front squat, sure. Yeah, of course we could. It'd be perfectly fine. And they're probably not bad at it, but they don't like it. So if they don't like it, they don't want to do it. They're probably not going to be happy doing it. And I sure as hell don't want to watch them do it if they're unhappy and angry. It's miserable. So my thought is, all right, well, let's find something else and whatever that means. And maybe then that takes us down the road of, all right, do you like dumbbell? Do you like trap bar? Do you like back squat? Whatever, belt squat, whatever you want to put in there. And then usually that will elicit a yes. And then that gives you some buy-in. Another thing that I would do is, as far as buy-in, is I would be pretty conservative in terms of the way that I start. I think sometimes, again, making it about me, I got to have six pairs of exercises. It's got to be four sets, and we've got to really get a good estimated one rep max on day one. All right. Okay. Let's maybe do one or two of those. Let's find a one rep max. If you think that's beneficial, let's find a run rep max. But let's maybe, instead of doing six pairs of exercises, let's do three. And let's start conservatively to where they feel that maybe, you know, it's not a bad place, and they didn't sign up for something that's just going to make them think about Navy SEAL boot camp. Because as much as we want good training, these aren't Navy SEALs. And they're high school or college basketball players that don't love training. They love basketball. And they're doing this actually more as a favor to us than they are, you know, for themselves at the first start of it. until they love the idea of what training can do for them. So then again, buy-in comes from just giving them little bits. Let them have success. Don't crush them the first day. If they feel tired, fine. Let them feel tired. But let them feel tired from something that mentally is more manageable. Let's front squat. Let's RDL. And then let's do a core and let's get them out. 30 minutes. All right. Tomorrow, we're going to add another piece in. Be ready. But let's not overdo it. I like to do, this is something that I think as interns and GAs, it could have been really beneficial for me. COVID actually helped me with this. I did a variation of the 1x20. Have y'all ever looked at that?
It's been a long time, but yeah.
Kaiser, tell me the names again. Kaiser and?
Ashley and Blake.
Kaiser, Ashley, Blake, are y'all familiar with 1x20 at all?
I don't believe I am.
Okay.
Yeah, I've done it.
Oh, okay, good. All right. So, I mean, it's as simple as it sounds. It's one set of 20 reps. The author of it is Yesis, Y-E-S-S-I-S. It's a really good starting point programming-wise for younger coaches. And the idea is it's a very global, whole-body focused training day, and you repeat it multiple days in a row. So it's one set. So now think about the volume here. Normally in a day, you do four sets or three sets of an exercise. On one day, you're just doing one. So now if you stack these days, now you're still getting essentially the same volume. More hypertrophic probably, but still. And it allowed me to be able to help these guys, girls also, learn the weight room where the routine wouldn't change. All right, what comes after goblet squat? Oh, I go to RDL. Good. What comes after RDL? Oh, I go to dumbbell bench. Good. So there's no change. It just allowed them to almost set and forget the program in their mind. And then they were able to go do it and let everything else throw them into a flux. The court or the field or school, it's going to be hard enough. I didn't feel like I need a freshman to be freaking thrown for a loop in the weight room also. So it let them approach it a little bit more. And then before you know it, they're starting to say, hey, look, 50-pound dumbbell bench is too light for 20, coach. Can I go up to 55? Well, hell yeah, let's go. But it was them. It wasn't me. But again, the buy-in, it allowed them to be able to just bite it off, not more than they can chew. They could move at it at a point that they could learn it and they could figure it out. And just like anything else, the foundation could set itself.
Good. Ashley, what do you have?
I have one question. When you're hiring and you're integrating someone, what is that golden question that you ask that either gives you a giant check mark, yes, I want this person on my staff, or a big red X, like no, thank you, that we can prepare ourselves for when being interviewed?
I think there are two variations of it. It's some form of, do you have to be a strength coach? And do you love strength and conditioning? It's not, do you want to be a strength coach? It's, do you love it? And do you have to be one? There is no alternative. If there's an alternative, just from what I've seen in my experience, that's not going to be enough to get you through 6 hours back to back coaching athletes with the same level of attention for every athlete. It just probably isn't. It's probably going to lead them somewhere else. So what I would really want is I want somebody who, when they answer that question, I want to hear it in their voice. I mean, you can tell me words, but I want to hear it in your voice, how much it matters to you. We've got an assistant strength coach position here. By title, it's postgraduate intern, but they work specifically with men's basketball and women's basketball, and that's it. It's paid. It's a well-paid internship with benefits, with health insurance, the whole deal. So it's something that we're fortunate. We can really be selective here. And when I ask people this, usually I don't get on the phone with them unless I've already heard positive things. So that in itself, it's an interview that's already occurred and people don't even notice. If I ask, let's say the coach at University of Nebraska about their unpaid intern that he works with, and he says, he's not ready yet, then I won't even get on the phone with him. And he doesn't even know that intern doesn't even know that he hasn't made the cut, whether he wanted it or not, of course. But when I do get a good recommendation, I get on the phone and I ask those questions. I don't let them know usually how much I've talked to their supervisor. I let them know that we've talked, but I ask, you know, just like we said, do you love strength and conditioning? Because usually there's been some time spent in the field already at that point. So they should know whether or not they love it. It's not hard to know that. But then you begin to know, or you begin to get to see, okay, what's the inflection in their voice? Do they sound excited? Do they sound like they're just answering the question? Do they sound kind of indifferent, indecisive maybe? Yeah, I love it. All right, well, I just heard a question mark. So do you or don't you? And I think sometimes it can seem a little brash, but it's always talking to a head coach when his mind is on winning an Elite Eight game and you don't run the warm-up right. That's going to be really brash too. I felt that just last year. So it's a good exposure. Interviews, even for internships, it's like teaching, just like coach, you know. When you teach, it's like scaffolding. You only take on what you're ready for. So Ashley, Kaiser, like, y'all aren't interviewing for head football strength coach jobs at University of Iowa right now because you're not ready for it. But you'll be interviewing for GA positions or paid internship positions because you are ready for those. And when you do go do those things, there'll be good experiences that you get to have. And they may go well. You may find yourself thinking when you get off the phone or off the Zoom, you may be thinking, all right, well, that could have gone better. But you'll at least know, if you do the appropriate level of reflection on it, you'll know where you want to improve as a candidate, your own candidate. So I think those are the two questions, really, and everything else will fall in line. Everything else, then, I would say the questions that I ask are, tell me about your relationships with players. I'll tell you something that I don't budge on. I want to know that there's no overlap or there's no conflict in terms of social relationships outside of the building. I had a guy that was recommended by one person last year for this job, this assistant position. And then I happened to know somebody else who was not on his reference list. I knew it, so I just called him anyway. And I said, well, tell me about this guy. He wants to come be our intern or our assistant. And he said, yeah, he's good, but he goes out with the players. And I said, all right, well, it was a 30-second phone call. Like, I was like, all right, well, he's off my list. And I said, I appreciate you letting me know. And he said, yeah, all good, man. And that was it. Like, it didn't even go any further than that. So I would make sure, again, that professionalism is at the top of what you do. It's okay to be informal with players. It's okay to be goofy with players. My language around players gets really colorful. I probably hold the record for the most F-bombs in our building in one day. And it's fun because it actually brings them in, if they're goofy in that sense also. So you can be informal in that way, but in terms of certain things, you cannot allow yourself to budge. So those are other things that I look for in terms of interviews. I want to know about how you build relationships with athletes. I want to know, can you help me build relationships with athletes? As coach, I know you know, when you've got an assistant strength coach on your staff, a lot of times they can click with an athlete that you can't. We've got a potential, I'll tell you, we've got a potential first-round pick on our team right now. He's been with us 2 years now. First year, last year was pretty rocky. He did what I asked him to do, but he didn't get a whole lot better. He got a little better. He probably got like the minimal 10% that anybody gets better when they train for a full year. Naturally, you're just going to get a little better. But the assistant that we brought in really, really clicks with him. And he probably had the best offseason of our entire team. And his relationship and my relationship, the player that is great. It's great. But I write the program for him, and I watch, and I make sure that we're going in the direction that we need. But I don't necessarily run his training because I know he and the assistant have that just freaking killer relationship. So when you know that you click with a player, obviously you don't want to overstep the head strength coach. You don't want to step on their toes, but definitely grow your relationship with players in a professional way, because not every athlete will click with every coach, and vice versa. So goes back again to buy-in. If you can create buy-in with a player, then awesome. But you're not going to bet 1,000. But again, thinking about reflection and what you're experiencing now, how are you going to answer that question when somebody asks you? Try to think in the car ride home. Try to think, what are the ways that I would answer these questions? If I'm asked, when I'm asked, what are my strengths? What are my weaknesses? Of course, the old adage of make your weaknesses sound like strengths and make your strengths sound like things that you can still improve. I ask myself that one a lot. As much as I love it here at Texas Tech, we know your timeline, your life at one place is probably, it's probably not 10 to 15 years. It's probably not, just odds being what it is. So I ask myself, if somebody ever says, what are your weaknesses, Andrew? I would like to think I am a person that can hold you accountable, but sometimes I am overly consequence driven. And what I would hope is with that conversation, it would be, I'm overly consequence driven. I'm overly willing to hold people accountable, but I'd rather be too tight and be able to loosen up rather than be too loose. And then 3 months down the road, I've got a player that's too loose and I can't ratchet it up on him now because he'll resent me for now all of a sudden being a jerk. So hopefully that reframes itself as a weakness that can become a strength. So just thinking about how to answer interview questions. Coach, to think about here at Salisbury University in Maryland, at Matthew 9, N-E-I-N, is a great coach to ask about that kind of stuff. They've since taken it down, but they used to have on their website, on their strength and conditioning page, and it's still a good page, but they used to have a really in-depth internship, almost like guideline of, if you're an intern, you should be ready to answer all these questions. And it was like 25 questions. It was really cool that they put that on the website for anybody.
I'll look at that. Or they took it down, try to reach out to them and get a copy of it.
And Coach Nine is awesome. He's a former baseball player, and he's been at Salisbury. We just said that coaches' lifetimes at certain places aren't overly long, but he's been there a long time. And he's their lacrosse and baseball strength coach. and they've won a bunch of national titles, and their weight room is run super well. They take GAs. At one point, I looked at being a GA for them. I never applied, but I considered it really heavily, and it just never quite worked out timeline-wise. But great program. Another great program, just while we're going down that road, Springfield College is a great one. That's another one that I looked at. I actually applied, was accepted there, and it would have been a place that I would have loved to go. They produce, if you, and I'm sure they will mark, they will show this on their website. Springfield has produced like a stupid number of high level strength coaches at all levels, Major League Baseball, NFL football, basketball, high level college, high school, private. I mean, it's crazy the number of strength coaches that they've produced. And then another one I would say is Merrimack, coincidentally in Massachusetts, but Merrimack is excellent. And they've got a GA program that will throw you right into it. Merrimack and Springfield both. They actually, they're kind of like sister schools in that regard. Their programs, their strength and conditioning programs are connected. But they throw you right into it. They don't make you observe, because you will have had to intern somewhere already. You're not just getting in there just because you want to do it. So they throw you right into it, and they make you run teams, and they do it in a way that helps you grow. But as far as interviews, it's something that takes practice. Don't ever turn down interviews. If you get an interview for a job, whether you want to do it or not, even if you wouldn't accept it, take the interview. There's value in it in terms of being able to get practice. Nobody has enough practice interviewing. They just don't come around often enough. And then you never know. You might leave the interview thinking, oh, I got to freaking take this. So I would never turn down an interview ever. At least at the early stage of a career.
Coach, I got a question, and then I would reflect, I guess, the competitive nature of this business. When you had that paid internship or that position you were talking about, how many, just the estimate, how many applications did you get?
You know, it's not as many as you would think. I think that probably is more because of the way that we market it. We'll put it on the CSCCA website. I'll usually go through a couple Instagram profiles, SNC vacancies. So young coaches, if you're looking for jobs ever, follow this handle. It's called SNC, S and the letter, the word and, C, vacancies. And they'll put up a bunch of jobs. A lot of them might be in England or Australia. It's an international database, but they'll put up three or four every day. And some are actually really, really, really interesting to notice. And then there's another one. It's They've actually got a Discord that if you pay like $1.99, you get on this Discord. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I see that. I follow that when I see it. And then
yes,
when it gets to the good information, it's like click, you know, Discord to find out more.
Yep. I'm even on that. I like it. I like just being able to know just so I can help other interns when they pop up. And for $1.99, that's easy. But not many applicants. So I think, again, it's back to marketing. But again, usually I've got a decent idea of who I want at that point anyway. I've yet to get an application. And we've hired three of these coaches here. I haven't gotten an application yet that sold me on them over somebody that I already knew of. And that's something that's part of this. I knew the person I wanted to hire 6 months before the job ever even got it posted. So we were in January last year, middle of the season, and the person that was in the position had only been in the position 6 months, and I already knew who their replacement was going to be. 6 months later. I turned the position over every year anyway, so I mentally I was planning on it anyway. But that's a lot of how this field works. I know you know that.
You have to open it for HR, but it doesn't matter. You already know.
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
That's exactly it.
The public. I'm going to shift it to Blake, and then I'm telling you this ahead of time, Coach. I want to get on another call each year and meet nuts and bolts. This is some of the best insight I think we've had that would help interns and GAs and nuts and bolts as minor and help, you know, anybody can program ChatGPT can. So I'd like to get to that at another time, but I do want to get Blake's question as well that'll help interns and GAs.
Awesome.
So I just got one question for you, Coach. How has your coaching philosophy kind of changed from whenever you first started out to now?
Yeah, I think we all come similarly from a similar philosophy, especially if all of us in this room on this call here, we're all introduced to training with the barbell for the most part, barbell, dumbbell, you know, the basics. And I think that's what everybody needs to start. But I think as you coach teams and you see the way that rooms and teams flow through lifts and you see what players like and dislike, as you just experience what being a coach is, you begin to shift it. So you're absolutely right in that it should always change. There should be things in there that you do believe in. It's good to take stands on things and know that you believe in certain things, but I think they should be pretty global things that you take stances on. At North Texas, we were very much a barbell-centric, dumbbell-centric, free-weight-centric team. That's all we had. So that's what we were. And I didn't think twice about asking somebody to load 90 to 95% on a bar and do an RDL with it for 1 to 2 reps, even in season, like in an important time of year. I got to Texas Tech, and I can tell you I did that, and I got crazy looks. These high-end players who've never done it before, who may or may not be willing to tell you as a coach, hey, I'm not doing that, quite literally. It causes you to shift mindset pretty quick. So I began to think, all right, look, conflict's not the end of the world, but it doesn't mean that I want to just invite it in by putting something up on the board that they don't like. So if we're going to do this, what's a better way to do it? So it taught me, okay, why do I do RDLs? Well, I need a high-intensity hamstring exercise that exposes them to load and keeps them at long levers and exposes them to stretch at the end ranges. All right, cool. What else does that? Well, we could also do a long lever hip bridge with weight on our hips. That would also do it. Or we could do an overcoming ISO in the hip bridge, driving a bar into the rails like a Bosch bridge kind of deal. And that's equally intense if they're doing it to the degree that they should. So I think looking back at it, I think it's changed in that regard in terms of what is an athlete open to doing, because they do have a choice. Either they could do it for us, or they could flat out say, I'm not doing it. And I used to think an athlete was crazy if they would come in, sit down, hey, coach, look, can I have a modification for this? Well, no, you're not hurt. You're fine. Just do it. And I used to think that an injury was the only reason for modification. And it really isn't. It was more my coaching experience was too limited to be able to help them at the time. And that's something I probably could have avoided a negative relationship with a couple players in the past if I'd had more experience. or again, if I hadn't made it about me, but I didn't and I couldn't. So it was what it was, but I was able at least to apply that to the next year. And I'll tell you, 3 years ago, I had one of the worst relationships that I've had with any player here at Tech, our first year here. And I made it a point that I was going to improve how I did it the next year. And it wasn't perfect. There's still moments of last year that I didn't think were great, but I made it to a point to improve again. And I think this possibly could be the best relationship group that I've had with any athletes anywhere. So I think in terms of philosophy, I'm long story. I think the more that you can adjust to the player, the better. If hang cleans don't feel good to basketball players, which all of my guys tell me they don't like them, then we went to clean pulls. And then it turned into straight bars, and they actually liked it, straight bar clean pulls. And then this is now morphed into, hey, why don't you go grab the trap bar? Let's do a power pull with the trap bar. Okay, which one did you like better? Oh, I like the trap bar. All right, cool. Well, let's do that now. Now we're all a trap bar power pull team. So it really becomes, and again, with your experience, as your experience grows, you'll be able to recognize that it'll occur to you at weird times that don't make sense. Oh, I don't need to snap. I don't need to Olympic snatch anymore. I'll just do a trap bar jump shrug. It's the same thing along the force velocity curve, if we're going to get into that. It's the same speed, which means it's the same load, and it's something that the players like better than getting a bar over the head and possibly hitting themselves in the forehead with the bar. So why do I care what it is? Why do I care if it's a clean pull or a trap bar power pull? It's the exact same thing. And I think as you begin to learn more and more, and if you stay invested and you learn about the force velocity curve and those things, your mind will make connections in places that they didn't before. Going back to the idea of scaffolding in teaching anything. I remember when I was taking an education class at school at TCU. I still remember right where I was sitting, learning about scaffolding. Like, you only bring the scaffold up as high as what has been built. You can't paint what hasn't been built. So why build the scaffold and reach any higher? Once you build it, then you can paint it and you build the scaffold higher. But until your athletes get to the point that they're ready for, you know, whatever, or until you as a coach are ready to take on velocity-based training, it may not make sense. It's okay to dive into those things, force velocity training. It's okay to dive into really in-depth catapult or connects on data with load monitoring. It may not make sense to you yet, but at some point it will. So I think at a certain point, reach for what you know you're capable of. It doesn't mean that you can't reach for things that are way beyond what you're ready for yet, but allow yourself to grow into it. You didn't take calculus as a freshman in high school. You had to grow into it. So I think that would be, again, how my philosophy shifts. My philosophy has been very, very basic when I needed it to be basic. And as I've developed as a coach, it's become a little more complex. But I don't expect my assistant, who's only been in the game a year or two, I don't expect him to know what I know. And I don't expect myself to know what Andrea Booty at UConn knows. So it's something that I think, again, you develop your philosophy within what you know, and then you allow it to change based on what you learn.
Well, Coach, the information you provided, and I don't know how old you are, but it seems like your wisdom and insight, discernment, probably exceeds your years. And I certainly appreciate you sharing it with us and whoever else listens to this. And I think for some,